You're listening to Fakeologist Radio Conference Call, another Fakeologist service to connect like-minded skeptics who want to share their ideas with like-minded individuals. Unlike audio chat, all you need is a telephone, whether it be a hard line or a soft line like Skype. Go to fakeologist.com/CC and learn how to participate or start a call. And hear it later on fakeologist.com. To comment on this call, find the post at audiochat.fakeologist.com and scroll through the archives. Now, on with the call.
How you doing today, John?
I'm doing well. It's quite muggy here in California.
Well, it's muggy here, too. Now, I listened to yesterday's call, only my parts, of course, because and my audio was cutting out, so I'm rather aggravated by that. I don't feel bad if my audio cuts out to tell me, because it's very annoying, to say the least.
Yeah.
And I'm actually quite aggravated now that I'm fading in and out, and that's a Bluetooth problem I was having.
Okay, yeah, you sound way better now. So.
Yeah, well, if I don't sound really well, really good on the call, then I'll reboot every device I have. And there's so many devices between me and you and this conference call. It's another miracle of technology. So
pretty funny.
I'm pretty sure I am recording now, according to this console that I'm looking at. I found the console for this, and I am recording, it says.
Yeah, did mine
do just for...
Was it okay on my end yesterday?
You sound fine, yeah, you were fine. Let me turn off the recording. It's GabFest. Here we go. So now I'm recording again. Did you hear anything that says we're recording?
No, I didn't. Okay,
that's better. Good girl. Good girl. Good conference call girl. You're doing your job.
Yes. She's almost as efficient as the lady who tells you that nobody's on the Skype.
Yeah.
British lady.
Well, now I just have to figure out how to make this conference call go live. I don't know how to do that. That's a tricky business. It would be kind of funny to make this go live. Because my audio chat can go live.
Yeah.
That's all set up and that's all computerized. But this, I don't know. I couldn't do it. I don't think I have the technology at this point to merge a phone line into the computer just yet. Skype is the only way I know how to merge phone and computer.
Yeah, I just learned recently with two phone calls. One of them was the one we did with that doctor in Bahrain, and
he was in Bahrain.
Yeah, and he couldn't he was calling in on a landline because he didn't have Skype wherever he was, and so Chris couldn't talk to both him and I at the same time with two landlines or two cell phones he had on Skype.
Oh, that's interesting. Another hidden restriction, huh?
Yeah, so you can talk to one person through Skype on the phone, but you can't talk to two people. So what we had to do was the guy had to call me on my cell phone, and then I had to add Chris to my call.
On your cell phone.
Yeah.
No, that's strange, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm on my phone too, and of course the fidelity is much, much less. And, well, that's okay. I'm debating whether I should make our call an audio chat or a phone or a show because I'm not sounding audio very, very good on the audio, and you're on a phone, so it sounds more of a chat. So if I put you as an audio chat, don't feel bad because there's no production value, which
no,
not
fine.
That I have any real production value, but
if you just want to. I guess we could say that maybe the two calls that we've done so far could be test runs for the actual in-studio chat or talk.
Yeah, we never seem to be in the studio at the same time, so that's why it may never happen. So in the meantime, we can put out these audio chats if people are interested, because I have my output has dropped down to next to nothing, and I want to put something out to remind people I'm alive if they could care less. I don't know.
Yeah, did you see that email that I sent you?
Yeah, I saw that. It was on the Caitlyn Jenner thing. And
Yeah, you want to talk about that right now?
Yeah, we could talk about that. The only reason I would talk about that is because I listen to mainstream talk shows. One of them is the Howard Stern Show, which is probably the most popular radio show on the planet. And I listen to a local show, which is another Howard, Humble and Fred show, which is local to Toronto, but it's global, of course, in scope because of the internet, and it is on Sirius fake satellite radio, or should I say simulated satellite radio, that's better. And they're both talking about it. So the only reason I would like to talk about it is because everyone is talking about it, because that is how the media works. And I don't know if people are aware of how the media works. The media gives people their talking points, their water cooler chatter, and I find it extremely aggravating, very aggravating. And I really don't like this story. I don't like anything about it. As we've said in the past, I'm a social conservative, so this does nothing for me.
Yeah.
In terms of, it doesn't advance any of my own agendas socially in my mind. It just irritates me. But I'm pretty sure that's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
So the main point we should bring up is that the intelligence agencies are not into the, in my opinion, they're not in the spy business. They're in the culture creation distraction business to keep everyone off balance, divided, talking about things that don't matter. And creating an almost anti-human, anti-family agenda all the time. And that's what they do, and we know they're doing it all the time because our media is jammed to the rafters full of nonsense 24/7.
That's true.
That's really the angle. This is the only angle that I really am interested in this conversation because the details are just nonsensical.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I did find interesting, I'm not really even associated with the story in it of itself, but what was funny was I had a friend come up to me, a friend at work, and he came up to me yesterday, and he's all, you know, so what do you think of the Bruce Jenner thing? I'm all, I really don't know too much about it. And I just told him that I had only seen the photo that you had posted up on Fakeologist on my talk, and so he said, well, you know, I've been employing some of the stuff that you've kind of showed me about media, and I found something you might be interested in. I was like, oh, okay. And he said, did you know that there is a television show that's about to premiere this week that's about a dad getting a sex change and his son having to deal with it? He's like, don't you think that's strange that it's premiering the exact same week that this whole thing goes down? I'm all, yeah, it falls right in line. It's perfect. And so he showed me the article, and I said, yeah, well, they obviously already had that thing in the can, ready to go to premiere it the same week that that this whole thing goes on. And then he also hit me to the fact that one of the premier places in this entertainment culture that we live in that you can go to get predictive programming is the show Family Guy, apparently.
Right.
And turns out on Family Guy in 2009, they had an episode where they talked about Bruce Jenner being a woman. So that puts it into the context as to, well, what is this really all about? And is it, you know, it's obviously a staged production of some sort. I've even waxed that it may be part of the television show's script to even have this. And I don't think, you know, the details are important of what it's about. But it's interesting that Bradley Manning, you know, the alleged whistleblower, came out not too long ago, and I think one of the main things of that whole thing was to get people used to the idea that, you know, a man's going to change his sex, and that the media is going to fall in line and call him by, you know, they're not going to refer to him as Bradley Manning anymore, they're going to refer to him as Chelsea Manning. And that kind of got people used to the idea that they're, you know, their entertainment idols, the people that they look up to on their television, when this starts coming out and this starts happening, it's going to normalize it. And now without, you know, without missing a beat, every single thing you see now, it no longer says Bruce Jenner anymore. And
yeah.
even if you, I even went to his Wikipedia page, and his Wikipedia page has been changed from Bruce Jenner to Caitlyn Jenner. So it's instantaneous, and everybody fell in line with it perfectly. They, you know, it's no longer question.
Yeah, well, I like the idea that it's all a script, and this is a lead up to a script. And I think K-Ham of K-Ham Radio, and maybe one day they'll post last week's show sometime. I don't know where it is, but if anyone else is looking for it, so am I. They were talking about some kind of integration between reality and movies and or television shows where they integrate the promotion and propaganda of these shows into so-called real media and real society and get people actively participating in more than just watching the show. So, for instance, it's a type of treasure hunt, I guess, where they have clues in the show and they might actually plant, I don't know if you've ever done a treasure hunt as a kid, but, or as a small child, but if you plant things, physical things in different areas and you get clues as to where to find them. I can't remember the name that K-Ham was researching, what it's called. It's something about active or artificial integration. I can't remember what the word is anymore.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've heard that.
Rochelle, we're talking about it, right?
Yeah, it was quite interesting. I never heard of that before because I'm not into video games, so I wasn't able to identify or relate to how video games might somehow integrate with so-called reality. But maybe this has something to do with it.
I think it's a step in that direction. I mean, are you familiar with I was not even familiar with this completely. I remember back in the 1990s, you know, when I was a teenager, that's kind of when this whole anime, like Japanese art started coming around. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I have no interest in that. I have no interest in that. But I know it's big in Japan, from what I'm told.
Yeah, neither do I. I have no interest in it whatsoever. But I started noticing that there was a skateboard company that would like use some of the artwork on some of their skateboards, and it was women, like, you know, drawings of Japanese women. In, like, very sexy attire, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then it came to my attention fairly recently that there is actual, you know, like, anime porn now.
Yeah, okay. Why not?
Yeah, so now you have cartoon porn, and I know that's been around for a long time, you know, even back as far as the 60s, but this is a little bit different because, you know, they actually have these like pornographic cartoon movies and stuff, and not that I've ever watched one or anything like that, but
it would be for research purposes only.
Right. Yes.
Like Pete Townsend of The Who.
Right. Yeah. The it's the old I read the Playboy for the articles.
Yeah. Me too.
No, actually, in reality, if you read old Playboys, they really do have interesting articles in there because some of the articles were written by Julian Huxley.
You mean the people that are trying to shape culture?
Yeah. I actually have an old Playboy with a Julian Huxley article in there talking about how the world's overpopulated, and what a great magazine, what a perfect magazine to employ that into, where it's telling men to be swinging single and bachelors for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, it's true. Well, this is a little off topic. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just saying a lot of this agenda has to do with basically getting people to not have kids. I think that's one of the ultimate goals, is to get people to not reproduce and to get people to be isolated in a far individualistic society. It's not individualism. It's we're going to separate you from them. Yeah, we're going to separate you from everybody else. That way, you have nobody to turn to, except the state, pretty much.
Yeah, and my question is, I always wonder if that is, who's leading who? Is it a chicken and egg question? Is society doing it on its own and the establishment is just accelerating it or magnifying it? Or are we led by the society, the creators of society, and the humans are going along with it, and it's an endless feedback loop where one accelerates the other, and who knows who started it, because we're just busy spinning and spinning around at this point.
Well, what you could look back on is you could look back on previous eras, and you can look at what people, you know, what people were into and what they weren't into, and what they were more focused on as far as, you know, say something cultural. In previous time periods, maybe for short periods of time, people's lives were more, revolved more around family.
Yeah.
And,
the United States was an agrarian, more rural, and therefore you had a family to maintain a farm.
Wasn't that
the way things were before the Industrial Revolution hit the United States? So that was just by necessity in a lot of ways that you had a big family because you needed help, unpaid, of course. And, of course,
yes.
This technocracy, this urbanization, this corporatization of society where you're constantly looking for the most efficient way to do things as a technocracy, which I believe we are in, a global technocracy. I really like that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Then you don't need people. You just don't need people to do things because the most efficient way to do things is use robots and automation.
Yes. Yeah, it is a very efficient way. It's funny, right before we got on this call, I was actually talking with somebody about this at work. They brought it up. I did not. But they were talking about how they went to go to the Toyota factory here in Long Beach and took a tour of it, and they just said there's not even people working there. They didn't know that. They weren't even prepared for that. They're like, wait a minute, the cars are made entirely by robots, and it's just basically people like doing the setup, you know, for what the particular part is and all that. But they do
everything the robots can't do.
Yeah, and I'm sure once they figure out how to make a robot that can do that part that the robots can't do right now, then those people will be out of a job as well. So.
Yeah, and then I guess the end result is the planners of society need to figure out what are you going to do with the people, because they're not going to have anything to do. If they don't have anything to do, then they won't have any income. So how are they going to buy the goods to keep the economy going? And if this is a giant Ponzi scheme where you need to keep the money spinning around quickly, then what's the plan? And if you were running society, you would have to come up with some kind of plan. And who would you turn to? You would turn to the experts, the technocrats, and the people that are planning it and pushing it. You really do need a plan. Otherwise, it could erupt or just fall apart. I really don't think we're just here by the great motivators of capitalism called profit. I think there's a lot of interference and steering to make this thing happen. I think the way society runs, at least in North America and Western Europe, is very delicate. It's a very delicate juggling act, I think.
Yeah, I think on maybe one or two levels, it's definitely a juggling act when it comes to the economy. But I think that there's a layer of elites that are untouchable because they're not really involved with economics or economies or anything like that. You know, they hire
people.
Yeah, and they're the people that you would say, you know, to quote the line from the from Oliver Stone's JFK, as big of a propaganda piece that movie is. They walk between the raindrops.
Yeah.
And so they don't carry cash. They don't go, you know, they don't go to a restaurant and put down a credit card to pay for their bill or anything like that. And they, they're, they're largely isolated away from the rest of society, and so they are the people who guide culture and society, and they hire what you could, you know, what you were calling technocrats, which definitely yeah. is a good term. It was like Patrick Wood was saying in that interview, that's an old term from the 30s. I actually first discovered that term reading a book called The Roosevelt Myth by John T. Flynn. And yeah. I did not know that was that was actually a political party back in the 1930s. I was totally unaware of that until I read that book. And so, yeah, I definitely agree that they are technocrats running things on the lower level. But I think what happens is the upper echelon of people, what they do is they know what the plan is, so they have to set it in motion by just basically giving the command that something needs to happen, and then the technocrats work out all the details of how that's going to be implemented into society.
Yeah, I agree. John, just give me 1 minute here. I'm going to put you on hold for a minute. A little hold music.
All right. Hello.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. I'm back. It's me, Tim, talking to John Adams of California. I'm calling from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, the media and economic capital of Canada. I'm on a Fakeologist conference call to accommodate those that don't have the technology that we normally use, which is TeamSpeak, which I call the audio chat, which has been quite quiet as of late. I think things tend to go dormant when the guy that runs it gets kind of quiet. It seems people are not too anxious to pick up the ball and start talking randomly, which is fine. I understand. People are quiet and busy. But this conference call is not streamed live, unfortunately. I haven't been able to figure out how to do that. But I do post it a couple days later, which seems to suit most people's audio listening habits anyway. Most people don't listen to things live, I find now. Television for sure, except for sports. Everything is on a delay anyhow, so we're trying to keep this message topical. And a lot of the things that I like to talk about are timeless. They really apply now, they applied in the past, and they will apply in the future, because the same old methods to run society are constantly being employed, just different technologies, because people are always moving forward in technology, and the people that heard the others are right there to meet them if they didn't even get there first. So John and I are talking on June 9th, 2015, and this is our drive home little conversation. John is normally found on hoaxbusterscall.com with Chris, who's also on a bit of a break. So I took the opportunity to hijack John and steal him for a few afternoon commutes of my own, because I think John thinks it a lot like I do, and it's fun to talk to him, because you're certainly more well-read than I am. Which is fine. You can do the reading and just tell me about it. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, I unfortunately haven't done much reading lately. It's been busy with other things, but starting.
Yeah, life does get in the way. I also like to do other things too.
Yeah, anytime I want to read a book of my own, my daughter wants to read another book. So.
Well, that's good. You gotta keep topical with the people you're around to keep them interested. I doubt the people around you are too interested in society, the way it's operated, or psychology. It's a difficult, very antisocial topic, but I still enjoy looking into it and talking about it, because it applies to everyday media all the time. And it's a guessing game for me, just trying to figure out what's real and what's manufactured. And I also like to refuse to discuss or look into the stuff that's shoved in my face. And the Caitlyn Jenner, the whole Bruce Jenner thing is particularly dull, boring, and offensive. And the only thing I'd like to convey to people that don't look into culture creation and psychology is that this stuff is planned and it's very highly orchestrated. There's more to it than just money, I think. And you were talking about how there's some various shows that were predictively planning or leading up to this event, familiarizing people with it, socializing people to these concepts. And the real obvious money angle is that this Jenner guy is, he's got a show, he was on a show, and now there's a new show. So even if he's not really doing what he says or they say he's doing, he's still participating enough, so I'm pretty sure he's being paid quite well, because this is a really, it's really humiliating, and it's really ridiculous. And I can't see how anyone would go along with doing this unless they were well paid. What do you think?
Oh, I definitely think it's when it comes to the star level, it's all about the money. So
yeah.
Whether he actually wanted to do this or not, I mean, and he saw no other means for a career outside of it, I don't know. It was funny because there was another article that came up just when I was kind of glancing at the stuff that my friend had shown me, was that there was something from 2014 where it was a tabloid, and it had said that it was a response because there was speculation, allegedly, that he was going to do this all the way back as far as 2014. And it said, you know, the article said, well, that's ridiculous. He's definitely not doing that. No, no, no. So there's this period of denial, and then, well, turns out it's true. And what it is it's a soap opera played out in the media, you see. And the difference between a soap opera back in the old days, because I noticed through my mother-in-law that they've taken a lot of the soap operas off the air.
Yeah, and the simple reason is women aren't home in the day as much as they used to be at all.
Yeah, and they don't need them anymore because now they have the soap operas of reality television, which aren't reality
right.
at all. They're highly scripted.
Right.
I mean, Chris was just even recently talking about it on a call with one of the guests about how, you know, Duck Dynasty is completely and totally scripted. It's not real. Obviously, these guys.
And why do you think that is?
Well, it's completely scripted, and for the same reason that the Boston bombing was scripted and Sandy Hook was scripted, and
my thought is
a controlled environment. That's why.
Yeah. Well, my thought isn't as insidious as that, and I'll tell you what I mean, what I'm getting at. Do you ever shoot your own home videos? Have you ever done that?
Quite a while ago, 20 some odd years ago, probably.
Okay. Did you ever watch what you shot yourself?
Yes, absolutely.
You watched it all the way through, all the time? More than once?
More than once, yes.
Did you ever try and show it to anybody else that wasn't in your, yeah, even your immediate family? Did you ever try and show it to anyone else?
Oh, sure. Nobody wants to watch that.
Right. Exactly. Why? Because it's deadly dull. Okay, I have to admit, I took a lot of high eight video in my time, and I almost never watched it myself. Almost never. And I guarantee I never watched it twice, because even though people I knew were in it, it was dull as nails. Dull. And I could never get anyone to sit down and watch it, even in my immediate family, for more than 5 minutes before they wandered off. Before anything else occurred. And I was also heavy into Kodachrome and slides back in the 70s and 80s. I could never get anyone to sit down and watch the slides. Never, 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 even though I thought they were artistically beautiful. What's my point? Well, reality, if you just look around you and just review in your mind your own everyday experiences, unless you're an MMA fighter in the ring every minute, your life is really dull. It's pretty boring and pedestrian. And if you have to entertain and sell advertising, you better spice it up. There better be blood and heads rolling and lots of lots of sexy girls that you don't normally see. There has to be a lot to keep attention. So that is why, in my opinion, it's not even insidious. Reality television has to be super heavy scripted, because otherwise nobody would watch, because it's dull. So it's either it's heavily scripted, it's heavily edited, and that's just to keep the audience. That's it, I think.
Yeah,
so that's my rant on that.
I agree, and I would say that that also applies to scripted events.
For sure. They have to have all the elements of a movie.
Yeah, it's got to be spectacular. There's got to be blood. There's got to be, you know, planes flying in the building. There's got to be planes flying in the building. Yeah, they've got to shut down the entire city of Boston to go look for the guy. And then there's this big, you know, there's this crescendo and lead up to it. And so, yeah, it's entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah, they can't catch the guy right away. They have to have tension. They have to have drama. They have to have mystery. They have to have all the elements of a movie, and even then it won't get a lot of attention.
Right. Yeah, this is all for our entertainment, because what we've been sold on, like you just said, you know, regular life is boring.
Oh, okay? Is it ever? I live it every day.
It's not enough. You know, there's always the promise. There's always the, you know, people who get caught up in our poisonous culture, they still have these illusions that they're still going to do.
You still there, John? What just happened here? Where's John? Let's see.
Lance.
John Adams. Is this you, Perry?
This is Lance Perry.
This is Lance. Is this Perry?
Oh, this is Perry, yeah. Lance and Perry.
Are you back?
I'm back. You're talking about
Boston and drama. Yeah, go ahead. You remember where you left off?
Yeah, I was just saying that people involved in this culture who get caught up in the entertainment culture, and entertainment and culture are synonymous with each other now. In this day and age, in old times, people looked. You know, the culture was created by people congregating with their families and their friends and doing things together.
Yeah,
you didn't look to other people to create culture for you. You know, it's kind of interesting that one of the first radio programs back in the day was the Carter Family radio show, and it was the Carter Family were a, you know, bluegrass country musicians back in the 1920s and 30s, and it was all centered around this family that played their musical instruments. Well, people used to do that all the time, you know, where your cousin played banjo and somebody played fiddle and somebody played guitar, and y'all sat around did that sort of thing, and that wasn't just in white culture, that was in all cultures. And so now people look to, you know, the mainstream media to give them their music. They don't no longer need to play instruments, but people get caught up in these illusions also, that they live vicariously through all of these people to fulfill their lifelong dreams for them. So if you ever wanted to be a football player and you weren't able to pull that off, now you can just, you know, watch football the rest of your life and live vicariously through that. And so there's vicarious living. There's lots of vicarious living. You can, you know, watch if you always wanted to be a stud, now you can watch James Bond, and he's, you know, going to catch the bad guy and, you know, nail 15 chicks during the course of the movie. So people also have these dreams that are unrealistic as well, that have been fostered by you know, being involved in a lifelong culture of entertainment.
Yeah, on all aspects. So there's a question you don't hear asked much, and I'll ask it actually. If we weren't so distracted, what should humanity be concentrating on, do you think? And the reason I ask that is because NASA, for instance, I like to use NASA, which is the military organization that controls space, and I would call it they steal children's imaginations every single day because they have laid out a fairly possible scenario as to what is beyond Earth, and they promote the heck out of their view. They don't really prove it well, but they push it so hard that it blocks anyone's imagination for any length of time. And therefore, anyone that has a chance at trying to figure out our place in the great vast unknown won't have time or the imagination space left because NASA has filled it all up with what I think is a lot of nonsense. So that's, for instance, what we could be concentrating on, what we could be doing, what the collective humanity's brain power, which I think is pretty great, if it could possibly be channeled into useful things. What say you?
Well, it's interesting when you watch a child, even a child that's raised with all of the cultural accoutrements and distractions, they're full of wonder about everything. They want to know what everything is. They're constantly asking questions about what everything is, and their mind is going in 1,000 different directions because it's all new to them. And this takes place much long after, you know, even to where they're into their early teens. But if all of the programming has taken effect by the time you're a teenager, there's something that you hear from a teenager very often, including myself. I can remember myself saying this at certain times, but not all the time, not as much as other children I knew. And that was, I'm bored.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Yeah, I'm bored, yeah. There's nothing to do.
I'm bored. And it's funny because just a couple of years earlier, you had plenty of things to do. So how did that get fostered? How did the wonder of life get sucked out of you at some point, you know?
I
tend to wonder if that's even a natural thing, and I don't believe that it is. I think it's culturally done. I think a lot of things, it has to do with schooling. Myself, I hated school. I absolutely just hated high school. I was not into it. I think the first 2 years that I was there, I had a pretty good time goofing off. But I always thought it was a bunch of nonsense. And so.
Yeah, I think most people do.
I think a lot of people think it. Yeah. And so, it's funny, like, once I got out of high school, I felt free, and then I actually wanted to, you know, read and to learn. And do things like that. And there's a couple of different types of personalities, but a lot of it, it's like you have the person who's, I guess, kind of like me, who I'm just not going to do the work. I'm just going to do enough to pass. And as long as I'm here, I'm going to have a good time. And then there's the person that's kind of too afraid to do that. And then there's the people who never even think about doing anything rebellious ever. So there's certain things that you're kind of born with, already, you know, it's already part of your personality when you're born and you're not even exposed to culture. And there's all sorts of different things within culture to appeal to that type of a person. Because they know they're aware of all the different personality types.
Yeah.
And so, to answer your question, finally, what could we be doing? Well, we could be focused on spending more time with our families, spending more time with our friends, making new friends. I'm just as guilty as anybody else out there of not going out of my way to make new friends. And, you know, I spend a lot of time with my family, but, you know, I do have people that I've befriended over the years, and I don't have a lot in common with them anymore because I've been friends with them since I was in high school. And so I keep in touch with them. but I really I really do need to make a better effort to make, you know, human contact with them. And whereas the internet and all that type of stuff is good for this, like, you know, you and I talking, or you know, talking to people who you have similar interest in that you otherwise never would be able to do, we shouldn't let the technology hinder us from making contact with people that we can actually, like, touch physically. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we shouldn't be making phone calls to people who live down the street when we can go down and visit them.
We shouldn't text people that we're eating dinner with either?
Well, that, yeah. That's pretty funny.
That's extreme, but that happens.
I know it does. I know it does. It's pretty wild. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah.
I've heard people talk about that before. I've never actually witnessed that myself, people texting during dinner to each other, but I have had people in the same room text to each other.
Well, it's a good way to talk behind someone's back without talking to them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. See, it even eliminates the effort you have to make to gossip behind someone's back.
Right. Yeah, it's great, and you can use short forms and everything and get it done really quickly and surreptitiously.
Right.
But that, so I brought up NASA there. What's your take on NASA and the world, the Earth, the space? Because recently, of course, the flat Earth meme has come out really strong, and I'm still listening to Mark Sargent's various interviews. He posts them at least once a week on his YouTube channel, Mark Sargent, because I like hearing new hosts. I always like hearing new hosts that I've never heard of. And he's definitely pushing hard and making the rounds everywhere. He's not saying anything, really, that I can latch on to or even criticize, because there's nothing much there. He certainly has I was the first guy to call him, and that was just straight up a coincidence, lest anyone thinks that I was working with him in any insidious way. It was really just a coincidence, because I thought it was pretty cool that he put his phone number up, and it was sort of showtime, so I thought I'd just dial him up and see what happens. Because who'd be crazy enough to put a phone number on their video? And he did, and he answered, and he was very polite and very interesting to talk to say the least. And that is his number one YouTube video with the most number of hits, besides his actual series. But anyway, I never really thought of the flat Earth much, but of course I've always been thinking about NASA, because it's definitely one of the more hot topics on cluesforum.info, and I'm pretty convinced that NASA lies about just about everything, especially since their specialty is space, and like I said earlier, children's imagination. They own those two areas. So if they're lying about everything they've done since they were created in the late 50s, then what is the reality of where we are? So all I know for sure is they're lying. I don't know anything else for sure. And I'm questioning everything and trying to piece it together. So, have you ever done the same or similar?
Yeah, I have definitely pondered all of the possibilities. I'm kind of in the same boat you are. I don't subscribe to anything because I don't know. I really don't know. I've looked into it a little bit, but not totally as much. And the reason that is that I haven't is just because it's not something that fully matters to me. It's kind of like whether aliens exist. I don't believe aliens exist, but it's something that I never really totally looked into as far as like conspiracy culture is concerned, because it didn't really matter to me whether aliens were running the world or not, because it wasn't going to affect me.
Mm-hmm.
But and it's the same thing with the flat Earth. It's like the flat Earth, the round Earth, it's not really affecting me either way. But NASA, you know, as far as lying, yes, I do believe they lie. The only thing that I keep coming back to with the flat Earth, if I was to get into a discussion with anybody, is if the planets and the moon and the sun are round, then why wouldn't the Earth be round too? So
mm-hmm.
I know that's kind of a, you know, non-descriptive
that's not bad.
argument.
That's pretty simple. That's pretty simple. That's interesting, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, I just always wonder about that. It's like, okay, everything else is round, but then, you know, someone could come back with an argument and say, well, you know, those are all holographic projections made to make you think that the Earth is round because by association, you know. So someone could say that's kind of a logical fallacy in a way, like, oh, well, you're just associating that because everything else is round. You assume that the Earth is round too. But at the same time, it's like, well, that's all you have to go off of because you don't have any more information because you can't trust something like NASA. And
yeah, I can't trust the score.
Yeah, so I just say I don't know either way. Hey, can you hold on real quick, Tim?
Yeah, go.
Okay.
So you're listening to the Fakeologist conference call with John Adams. If you want to join in, you can. I'm trying to do these calls on John's schedule. I have time similar to his in the late afternoon, Eastern time. If you want to join in or you want to look into this, come to fakeologist.com/CC, for CC is in conference call, and you can easily join in. All you need is a phone. And I know all of you that are listening have some kind of phone. It can even be a soft phone, as in Skype, a hard line, Bakelite phone, as they say on the No Agenda show, and you can communicate. You can talk, and if you've always wanted to talk to John, John's here. If you are anywhere in the world, there are access numbers, for the most part, in most countries that I've seen, and they're all listed on my conference call page at fakeologist.com/CC. And I'm not giving up on audio chat. This is just another way to communicate. If you want to talk about fakeologist.com type subjects, if you want to talk about any podcasts that are interesting, any websites that are interesting, any topics that are hot, and you don't want to be laughed out of the call or off the internet, come here and you can communicate. This broadcast does not go out live. It is recorded and edited to take out all the little blips and silences, unlike audio chat, which automatically takes out the silences. There's lots of ways to communicate and just jump in for 10, 15 minutes and see if you're interested in the call. You can also just come on the call and mute yourself and stay quiet. If you just want to listen, that's fine too. But we'll see how long we can do these calls in the afternoons. John seems to be free most afternoons at this particular time, and he's usually free for an hour and a quarter. So if anyone else wants to join me on these calls, feel free. Again, I'm also, I'd rather use audio chat because the fidelity is better. But you can also come on to the conference calls. And if you are not a computer person and you cannot get DeepSeek working. Yeah, hey, Warner. I was just letting everyone know. There's a lot of people that don't come on my audio chat because they can't get the TeamSpeak going. So I'm just inviting everyone to. I'm pretty sure almost everyone knows how to use a phone. And there's no setup required. You just dial a number. You punch in the 6-digit access code and boom, you're there, just like you just did.
That's right. It's very simple.
How much time do you got right now?
About 10 minutes.
All right. Well, I welcomed if you want to come back tomorrow as well.
Sure.
If you're available, and if I'm available. I'm sure people might want to chat with you because you have lots of research that I'm sure they might want to talk about. Or if they want to ask you a question, you're fairly knowledgeable about these things, and I have opinions on just about everything and deep knowledge on just about nothing, but people can join in. Go.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I know I was going to say something about NASA real quick since we were just talking about it.
Yeah, go.
I had posted something up there on Fakeologist having to do with NASA and the moon. You know, the word Nazi or Nazi in Islam and Judaism, it has to do with the lunar calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so NASI, the way that's spelled, it has to do with the moon. You know, and so it's kind of funny how that terminology is, you know, just one letter off from NASA.
Yeah, isn't that just a coincidence though?
I don't know.
Or you think it might not be?
I think it might not be a coincidence, but it's mm-hmm. definitely.
Yeah, you made a huge post on that.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
So,
I saw
so
that.
It's speculation on my part, but I think it's not a coincidence.
Okay. Well, a lot of people don't think the alphabet is a coincidence, and a lot of people don't think numerology and gematria and our language is a coincidence. I personally, now I'm referring now to the gematria specialist, Zach Hubbard, who has a website called freetofindtruth.com, which I do enjoy. I do subscribe to it and watch. I think, and I've told him this to his face, well, to his virtual face, that he goes overboard and he crunches numbers so many ways that it almost seems like he's just trying to fit a mold. But that doesn't mean that there aren't real patterns, a lot of them, all the time. So I do agree with him for the most part.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that there's something to a lot of that stuff, but, of course, a lot of it gets overblown. I used to dip into that, my toe into that stuff a lot more than I do now. So a lot of it's left over from previous research.
But aren't you like, are you like me at all? And when you read a story, you just can't help adding up digits now in your head and looking for patterns?
Yeah, when I see certain numbers, I definitely start doing that. But I don't do it as much as I used to. When I first started looking into this type of stuff, I was looking between every nook and cranny and under every rock.
Yeah, for conspiracy or some kind of clue as to what's really trying to be told, what story's really trying to be told. What's your take on, do you have an official stand on the moon landing, the Apollo program?
Yes.
Did it happen?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. Not at all. I think, you know, what was funny was I read a book a long time ago, a funny book, but it did have some interesting information in it, by good old Richard C. Hoagland. Okay.
Yep.
He's the face on Mars.
Tell everyone who he is.
Yeah, he's this guy. I guess he worked for NASA at one time, and claims he was actually in Downey, California, which is not too far away from where I work. Whatever the space place is over there, or used to be there. And, you know, he was there when, you know, the moon landings took off. And then he says that there was a guy walking around with flyers being escorted around by NASA officials. And he passed one of these flyers to Richard Hoagland that said that the moon landings were faked and they were done at a studio in Hollywood and this type of stuff. So that immediately means that the moon landings were real. Right?
Because you mean the guy that promoted they were fake was just an idiot sitting on the sidewalk with flyers?
No, well, what he says in his book, he says that there were actual NASA people escorting him around to make sure that these flyers got passed out to people that the moon landings were faked. And so so that means that from his perspective in his book, that means that, the moon landings must be real because these NASA guys were passing out these flyers that said the moon landings were fake on the day of the moon landing, right?
Yeah.
And so then he goes through this whole thing that talks about how there's, you know, these glass structures on the moon and they're from an abandoned ancient race, and then there's, you know, faces on Mars and there's pyramids on Mars that line up exactly with the pyramids at Giza and all this ridiculous nonsense. And it's a rabbit. I never bought into any of the face on Mars or that type of stuff, but the good part of his book has to do with the Freemasonic aspects of all of the missions and, you know, the name Apollo and the eagle has landed and that type of stuff. And how, you know, all of the guys, all the astronauts are all Freemasons and whatnot. So, that only strengthens the idea that it's all faked, because, you know, you can tell a Freemason to, you know, be hush-hush about what's really going on, and when it comes to faces on Mars and pyramids and glass structures on the moon, that's all, you know, just rabbit holes for you to go down.
Yeah, and it all confirms that there is a moon surface to actually land on. And I think, me personally, I question just the dimensions of the moon in terms of, is it even, well, three-dimensional? I agree, it's round in the sky. I can't argue with my eyes in that sense, but what exactly is the nature of it, since I'm sure we haven't gone up there? I don't know how close we've got to even creating any kind of accurate digital representation of it, an explanation of it. I question the distance, its size, all of that. I don't buy into holograms because that requires, to me, a light source and some kind of suspended material in the ether to reflect off it consistently. So holograms never appealed to me or were never demonstrated to me in any convincing way. But, yeah, he's just confirming that there is a moon that you can land on and that has some kind of structure that, so he's just a layer of deception to reinforce the ultimate myth, which is how they portray or describe the moon to all of us in their teachings.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly what all that entails as far as, you know, whether the moon has a surface or, you know, what it is, or if it's made of green cheese or whatever. But as far as NASA being a bunch of liars, that's something that I can confirm.
Yeah, you agree with that.
Yeah, it's funny because if you go out to Pasadena, California, okay, and out past Pasadena, there's a city called, why is the name escaping me at the moment? There's a city called La Cañada, and that just means canyon in Spanish.
Okay.
Right? Which it's spelled the same way as Canada, by the way. So.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, La Cañada and Flint Ridge is the city right next to it, and that is where NASA is. And interestingly enough, this is interesting. They've got this massive facility built out there in this canyon. Just happens to be called Devil's Canyon, of course. Not too far down the way, you have Jet Propulsion Laboratory. You have all Pasadena is literally just peppered with all sorts of space, like little. You'll just be driving down the street and you'll see, you know, a little like business complex, and you'll just see all of these strange names on all these business things, you know. Space Exploration Incorporated, or, you know, something like that, right?
Okay.
And they're all over the Pasadena area. You also have Caltech right there in Pasadena. And, if you know the history of Caltech, what Caltech is deeply involved with, you know, JPL and all that stuff. But Caltech's a big thing. There's a book out by a lady named Lily Kay. She wrote a book called The Molecular Vision of Life, and it goes over the history of the Rockefellers funding Caltech into existence for the purpose of microbiology and eugenics research. And so the actual founding of the college there was for eugenics research in the beginning. That's what it was founded for, was eugenical science. And
I wanted to talk to you about eugenics. We're going to have to do that on a call because that is a very interesting subject, very interesting,
yep.
And it's sort of an underlying theme to so much of the agenda, the technocracy.
Yeah.
I really believe in it. It's not a word that's thrown around anymore.
Oh, not
in common
at all.
Use.
Yeah, and what's funny was I think I've said this on a call, and you may have heard this on a talk with me and Chris. It would have to be something that we would get into more detail about. But my grandfather worked at Rockwell and Parker Hannifin, and he worked on the Challenger engine, okay?
Is that the one that blew up?
Yes, that is the one that blew up. And he lost his job because that space shuttle blew up.
Mm-hmm. Was that the O-ring one?
That is the O-ring one. And I even mentioned this on the call that I did with Chris, where I talked about this a little bit, that my grandfather was obviously really upset at the time. But he was also upset at the fact that he didn't really believe that the alleged problem came from whatever it was he was associated with, right?
That would be the level of deception that he was willing to question. The O-ring,
right.
The O-ring being a cover for the whole excuse for why it blew up, but he would never, probably in a million light years, I've thought that the whole thing was a giant deception because it's just too big.
Just too big. But what was funny was is if you go and you look into that a little bit and you look at you could verify what I'm saying because the history of it will actually say that the O-ring was manufactured by Parker Hannifin in Irvine, California, right? Which that's where my grandfather worked at. He was an engineer. And
okay.
And so, like I was saying, I was thinking to myself, well, you know, he probably didn't make a mistake. There was no mistake to be made. You know, he probably built the component and the part of, you know, it's always funny to me because my other grandfather worked at a very small, tiny company called Aeromill Engineering, and that was also in Irvine, California, which used to be not so much anymore, but all of Southern California was at one time just peppered with military industrial complex, small businesses that made nuts and bolts for this and that, right?
Yeah.
And so he worked for this company called Aeromill, and that's all they did. They literally made, like, brackets for, like, the wings on Boeing planes.
Okay.
And that's all that they did. And so there were all of these companies where all of the work was all spread out in between all of these little companies. And it was funny, you know, when you think about it, you're like, well, why wouldn't you just have one company kind of do the whole thing? Why would you contract out all of these different parts? Well, if you only know what you're making is this one little part, then you wouldn't, in the end, know that the whole thing really didn't work and really wasn't being planned to do something with it anyways, right?
No, yeah, I suppose that's possible. Even if you worked in a big, sprawling industrial complex, you wouldn't necessarily get to walk around and coordinate with the other widget makers to try and put the big picture together either. So
no,
that really doesn't bother me as a, yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of how I look at things. It's like these people in the space industry a lot of times, I mean, because you don't, they themselves don't actually get to go out onto the launch pad or anything like that. They just do what their little compartmentalized job is, and they really do make parts. You know, they really do make all of the stuff. So that stuff really is being made, but it's not really being used.
Okay. Well, I still think that something is blasted off into space, towards space.
Yeah.
Something is blasted off. It does go to a distance, but once it's outside our normal six senses, then anything can happen, in my opinion.
Right.
Then Disney takes over.
That's what I was getting at. I wasn't implying that no space shuttle gets blasted off. I was saying how my grandfather wouldn't know whether a space shuttle goes into space orbit or not. You know?
Yes. Nobody would.
Yeah, because that wasn't his department. His department was, you know, engineering engine components for, you know, an alleged thing that's going to go into space, and he just accepted that there was this thing that, you know, went into space, right?
I really wonder how many people are actually told that the one sentence or the one concept that the whole Apollo, space shuttle, ISS, the whole thing is one big hoax. I wonder if those words are ever exchanged between the people near the top, the lead actors, if those words are ever spoken or are they words that are never spoken but just applied. I wonder if those words ever are repeated.
Yeah, that's a good question. That could be something that could be something we could explore tomorrow on a talk.
Sure. All right. Well, we're wrapping it up now. I'm going to post these two calls individually. I'm going to try and clean up the little blips and spaces, and I'll post them up as afternoon commutes with the Fakeologist and John. That'll be cool. That's great. They're just
cool.
Enough to digest and swallow, and hopefully people might consider calling in to this little broadcast if they have something to add.
Yeah, if it goes that we can do it tomorrow, let's do it same time, same channel.
Yeah, well, I always know your block of time, and I always try and match it with mine, so that'd be great. Yeah, this has been good. Enjoyable,
cool,
as always.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, take care, John.
I'll hopefully talk to you tomorrow, okay?
All right, great, excellent. All right, take care.
All right, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey folks, Alex Jones here, but I'm not scaring the pants off you trying to get you to buy some storable food or some seeds. I'm listening to Fakeologist Radio. Listen now at Fakeologist.com today.